Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 2017 Juneteenth Celebration on Saturday, June 17th in Foster Hall at Clark College, Vancouver, Washington. Juneteenth, aka Freedom Day or Emancipation Day, is a holiday commemorating the abolition of slavery in the state of Texas some 2 years after slavery was abolished. The Juneteenth celebration will feature African dance, speakers, music, food, a pie contest, and more. Again, that's the 2017 Juneteenth celebration on Saturday, June 17th in Foster Hall at Clark College, 1933 Fort Vancouver Way in Vancouver, Washington. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
It's 10:59, almost 11 o'clock. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's time for the Dirt Bag here on the third Wednesday of the month. And today they're answering gardening questions. Jim is here as co-host, and we're going to get right to that in a moment. Thank you very much for listening to KBOO. And you can become a member of our wonderful station if you go to kbu.fm and click where it says donate. Here comes the Dirt Bag.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings.
Okay, now here comes the Dirt Bag.
Okay, it is alarming how charming it is to be a farming. And boy, we've got it. This is it. The time, kind of peak planting season. Wouldn't you say, Jim?
It depends on what you're growing, of
well,
course.
That's true. But I mean, as far as
everything.
Yeah.
It's the peak season.
It's time to plant everything. I mean,
or take care of things you've just planted.
Yeah. Well, good morning, Glenn Andreessen, here beside you now until 12 noon, and Jim Gilbert is here, tore himself away from the farm, lots of planting to do, he's been telling me, to try to take advantage of the free water that's coming tomorrow.
That's right, you can't, it's pretty scary, I mean, not scary, but amazing amount of rain predicted for June.
And some wind.
I didn't see the wind.
Well, may not happen, but some gusts of 30 or something like that.
Wow.
Just something to keep in mind here. Anyway, we've, as usual, got a full show for you lined up. We've got our plant of the month. I'll be talking about green beans. And I was thinking about it. Well, maybe I should have just gone for beans in general. But I have never grown dried beans. Beans for drying. Have you, Jim?
Nope. Always green beans.
So I was hoping a listener would call in and give us their experience on, is it worth it? That's always been kind of my thought. Is it worth all that hassle to grow it, to harvest it, to dry them, to shell them? Depends how much you grow, I guess. But anyway, that's kind of been my rationale.
I think back in the day, some of my green beans stopped, just got neglected and became dried beans.
Well, coincidentally, last year, some of mine did that happen to me, and so I saved them. And shelled them and planted them, and I got a crop coming up.
All right.
And green beans are open pollinated, the Blue Lake that I grow, so they should be true. We'll see, but that was fun.
Good.
Our dictionary, our dirtbag dictionary word today is cultivar. Jim will talk about that. That's a good one. I asked Jim to come up with a word, and that is one I think that, we hear that kicked around, but what exactly does it mean? We'll talk about that. Half past the hour, we have a stumper, garden stumper, and we'll also be talking about watering and mulching. Those are two things that, even though we're talking about rain tomorrow, it won't be raining after that probably very much, and it will be necessary. And I'll have some thoughts about planning or even planting in some cases now for the fall and winter garden. You think about, oh yeah, I'll have a fall garden. Well, it starts now, at least thinking about it. So that's what we've got. And all the music today will be having to do with water, since that's what we've got coming. I'm looking forward to it, actually. Garden needs it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I've irrigated some, but I'd like a drenching of half an inch at least would be good. But
it changes our work regime, and actually I don't have to get up quite so early, start so early if it's raining. So I'm looking forward to that, too.
Okay, well, let's talk about green beans here. This is reminds me of my youth. One of my first jobs was picking beans, green beans, for the cannery. There in the southern Willamette Valley, the beans were taken to Eugene. I don't think there's a cannery in Eugene anymore. In fact, there are very few canneries anymore. And what I was picking was pole beans. And then that gave way to bush beans. So you didn't have, or the farmers didn't have to go to the expense of putting up poles and trellising them. That was a job. That was also a job, which I never had, to string the string for the beans to grow on. Seems so anachronistic now.
Yeah, people of a certain age can remember the buses pulling up to the grade school and taking kids away to go pick beans. And
grade school?
That was where I recall where they started from. We didn't do it from high school. It was in front of our grade school. Maybe we were in eighth grade.
Well, maybe so. Yeah. I mean, I started at 10 or 11, which was pretty darn young.
Yeah.
I don't think they would allow that now.
No, I know. It's kind of a pity in some ways because, you know, although I didn't really like picking things, I discovered after doing it for half a day and making $1.60, I thought, I'll go mow lawns. But it was a big thing.
And I remember looking at fields that had been strung with white string, and it was beautiful. They were pretty symmetrical and, you know, these big narrow Vs going up, or Ws going up and down the rows, and
like a crystal artwork.
Yep. Yeah, that's the way it was. But we digress. Let's talk about green beans here. They've been around for thousands of years. Although the Blue Lake variety, which is still my favorite, it has that nice, nutty, meaty flavor to them. I, for one, do not prefer my green beans cooked al dente. I like them soft. Mm. I think there's a little bit more flavor at that point. And although I'll eat them the other way, just with salt, no butter anymore, just salt. So anyway, I've got my green beans coming up, but I thought I'd talk a little bit about the when to do it. Gosh, you can plant green beans just about any time between April and maybe even into July. Yep. I think a good strategy for planting green beans is to plant some later, because they do get mildew and other diseases, and the plants that are planted later, which would be younger, then have more defenses against the powdery mildew and other fungal diseases. So that's also not a bad strategy for zucchini. Mm-hmm. Plant some of those a little bit later. The problem with planting too early with green beans, even in April, is that they can rot, so to speak, before they germinate. And that's the case with a lot of seeds that are planted too early before their time. They're really considered a warm weather crop. But if you get them germinated, then they'll grow pretty well, and you have to worry then about slugs. They seem to love young, tender bean shoots coming out of the ground. But they grow quickly, and if you can get your sluggo bait out there quick enough, this is an organic bait, proof for use in organic farms and gardens, then that can put the stopper to the damage there. It seems to be a problem too. I was reading up on this from OSU that if the wider the bean, the greater the likelihood that it will crack, which would allow then more fungal diseases in.
The wider the bean?
Whiter. So, huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that's what the research says. So make sure you just don't plant them too early. I guess that would be the case. Mm-hmm. I had some blank spots in my row that didn't germinate, or they got consumed by something else. And so I replanted, within the last week. And I think that I have no doubt that they will come up and catch up with the other ones.
Yeah, the soil is warm now. I mean, and that's what you're saying, like in mid-April, it's still kind of cool. And, you know, when you get into May and you get some sun, a good sun on that soil, then the seeds will germinate quickly and come up.
Yeah.
And that's what we want.
Right. So, like I said, I plant Blue Lake pole beans, and they do need trellising. I recommend having a trellis or growing pole beans because you get a lot more production, and it's pretty easy to put up a trellis. It doesn't have to be anything fancy. It could just be one post or a pole that you put into the ground, and the beans will wind around it even. But I have mine on, I have a 12 or 15 foot row, and I put a wire at the bottom and a wire at the top and string wire in between.
But bush beans are okay too.
Indeed they are, but the drawback is that you kind of have one crop and that's it. With the pole beans, they just keep growing and will keep producing until frost. I've harvested them in October, certainly. The key to keep them growing and producing is to harvest regularly and not do what Jim and I have admitted to doing, and that's letting them go, so to speak, and the beans themselves become inedible, and then they will start forming their seed pod. And when that starts happening, then the plant is triggered to say, okay, we're done producing new pods, let's put our energy into making pods, beans for next year.
So, and my favorite green bean is Romano.
Yes, there are plenty of varieties there, and OSU Extension has a pretty good list on those. on the bush beans, there's many varieties there too. What I recommend is just trying one year and see if you like it, and try another one the next year, and eventually be like me and be an old grouchy old man and set in his ways. And I know what I like, though.
That's right. Only Blue Lake. That's it.
Well, I've grown others like Fortex, which I do like. They're a slender French bean. But as far as easy to grow, that's just it. That's why I'm at, you know. Let's see. There's a list here that... no, I didn't print it out. Sorry, that OSU Extension has. But if you... do a search for growing green beans in Oregon, you'll get to the OSU Extension, and they have a great website for that.
It's a nice crop and easy to grow here in our area.
Yeah, right. Very little, except for the slugs. I have very few problems with them. Aphids don't seem to be a problem on green beans. So they like full sun. Mm-hmm. So give them that, or at least give them full sun to where they get big, they'll be in the sun. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a nice way to, if you have a compromised space to where you don't have a lot of room, well, maybe try it here in a little shadier area, but when it grows tall, 5 or 6 feet, then they'll be in sun. Mm-hmm. It's one way. And they'll grow more than 5 or 6 feet. It's more like 7, 8, or 9. All right. Now, listeners, if you do have some experience on growing beans for dried beans, give us a call. In fact, give us a call no matter what. If you have a question, that is 503-231-8187.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, we have our first question.
Thank you. This is Tammy in the air room. Hey, I planted Fortex for the first time this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I my beans are in four different upside down pots. Anyway, they're in an array, so I could grow several different kinds this year to sort of change it up and see what I like.
Good.
I planted Carmen Knot.
Okay.
And another one I'm not remembering, and Vortex. And the other ones are up and, you know, happy and excited. The Vortex, like there's three beans are sort of just now poking. So I planted them on Memorial Day. So what the heck?
Yeah.
Are they slow to sprout in general?
And they're all new seeds this year?
New seeds this year.
Well, since all of them were, I mean, the others were growing better, and most of the Vortexes have not germinated,
right?
Then I would tend to think that it is the variety.
Okay.
But you could also, how many, you said three or so came up?
Yeah.
Out of how many?
20.
Okay, and many, and most of the others came up, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I've been counting. They're good.
Well,
I have to get this phone call.
Okay, that could be a...
I'd be listening.
Yes. It could be a bad batch.
That's right. I mean, the source of the seed could have some problem with it.
Uh-huh. Are you there to answer our questions now, Tammy? Was it packed for 2017, the seed?
Yes, sir.
Yes, yes. Well, one test that one can do determine the viability of seeds is to germinate them inside in a paper towel, a moist paper towel, so you can, you know, plant 20 seeds and see how many germinate without slugs, and you know, and they don't have to grow. You could plant them, guess, but as soon as they start putting out the root, then you'll know that they're at least viable.
Viable. Well, okay, so I didn't catch a lot of what you were saying about planting the benefits of planting beans later. Were you
only because the plants will get mildew, powdery mildew,
okay,
and so a younger plant has better defenses against that.
Oh, so. If I do the towel thing, paper towel thing, and then plant those that are germinated, it's not too late.
That's correct.
Okay, that's what I'll do.
We do a lot of pre-germination in the nursery in our production of plants, and it's kind of a neat way to avoid taking up space with seeds that don't germinate.
Yes. You know? Yeah. Ah. But beans generally are. You know, you get pretty good.
No fail.
Right. If they're good and you know, they're never 100% you know, germination rate, but should be more than, what did you have? 15%.
Yeah.
You know, 3 out of 20.
Well, thank you. And now I want to just tell that caller that was calling while I was asking my question selfishly to call back.
Okay.
I missed him.
Oh.
So please call back.
Very good.
Wherever you are.
Oh, if they had a question on dried beans there too. So.
Yeah.
But this is a good time to go to our first music piece, which is an old standard. I did a little research on this too. Come Rain or Come Shine. And this was performed by Diane Schur. But it's by Harold Arlen, Johnny Mercer. And it was written for a musical called St. Louis Woman. I've never even heard of St. Louis Woman. Jim?
Nope.
No. Tammy? Nope. No. Well, anyway, maybe this is the only song that came from that, but this is a beautiful arrangement for Diane Schur. Come Rain or Come Shine.
Nobody's loved you. Come rain or come shine. High as a mountain, deep as a river. Come rain or come shine. I guess when you met me, it was just one of those things. But don't you ever bet me, 'cause I'm gonna be true if you let me.
You're gonna love me like nobody's loved me. Come rain or come shine, happy together, unhappy together. Oh, it was just one of those things. But don't you ever bet me, 'cause I'm gonna be true if you let me. You're gonna love me like that.
Come rain or come shine, Diane Schur. Good singer. Yep. Goodness gracious. In any event, let's move on here. This is Glenn Andreessen with Jim Gilbert. Let's move on to a topic that it's strange, watering and mulching. And we know we're having some rain coming tomorrow, but this is the Willamette Valley, and our average monthly rainfall for July is less than 3/4 inch, and the same with August. How much, generally, how much water do you put on your garden or your trees that your or bushes or whatever per month? Or do you have any idea, or per week? Any idea?
You know, maybe if you calculated it out, would be about like, you know, 8 gallons a week.
Per plant. Yeah.
During hot weather.
I know that the experts, whatever that is, will say for lawns about an inch a week. You know, you put your tuna tin out there and you got your water going, and you know, when you know, if you have an inch of water,
that's a fair amount.
Tis. Yeah. And you know, gardens would probably need maybe not quite that much because of mulching. That's what we're going to talk about here.
Well, in fact, one of the, I always like to say this, is that, you know, you can, if people try to water their orchards or their fruiting shrubs and stuff on the same time as they're watering their lawn, which is a lot of times people do it once a day, you can damage your plants and cause them to die from overwatering.
Uh-huh.
Because they're much deeper rooted than grass and don't need that much water.
And that brings up a good point, that we would approach our vegetable garden different than our fruiting garden for that very reason that you just mentioned. They have deeper roots, mm-hmm. whereas freshly growing or sown beans, for example, who don't have a deep root system yet, they might need water once a day,
mm-hmm.
whereas that we want a deep watering less often for permanent plants.
That's right. And I would say, in my experience, that probably 90% of the reason for plant death is overwatering, and much more so than underwatering, especially in the ground. Container growing is a little different.
Yeah.
You can do it both ways. You can kill them each way really easily.
Equal opportunity there.
Right. But if they're in the ground, nature can buffer your neglect.
Or over-exuberance, even.
Right.
So, to some extent, because it can dissipate out
That's right.
the water, and if you have good drainage. So, Well, you were telling me, and we talked about this last year more at length, but maybe just a little refresher here on what you're doing with the plastic culture or the plastic mulch.
Yeah.
That you started using for your long rows, rows of nursery stock.
Yeah, it's pretty innovative because, as far as I know, we're still the only nursery of any scale doing this and for the nursery growing. But we do it in two different ways. One is for our rows of fruit trees, where we now plant two trees wide in a single row in a raised bed covered with a very thin layer of plastic. Amazing results as far as reducing weed growth and water retention and soil warmth. And what's most interesting right now to me is the fact that we have wider beds, 4 foot wide beds, where we do cuttings. And in some cases, those cuttings don't work, or we have more bed than we need. And my partner Lorraine and some of our crew members now are using those extra spaces to grow vegetables with really remarkable results too. The black plastic warms the soil. It also helps hold moisture in, and weeding is tremendously reduced. And that's a pretty thin layer of plastic. I mean, I don't like using plastic,
right.
but it's for all the benefits of it. It really has made our life a lot easier growing vegetables.
Yeah. I mean, there's pros and cons of everything, and if we're allotted a certain amount of petroleum products in our lives, if you bicycle once to the store rather than drive, then you probably have my okay to use plastic culture.
Sure, maybe one less tractor mowing or right. something, So,
well, we've got a couple of calls that we should get to, Jim. Oh, just one. Excuse me, David. Good morning. You're with the Dirtbag.
Good morning. I was interested to hear you talk about slug bait. Now, my garden helper, I've got a more experienced person who's helping me. Says I've got a slug infestation on the winter squash we just planted, eating the leaves. So she suggested using beer as bait.
Well, that can work. It's not so much a bait as it is an attractant that they come to and then drown.
Yeah. Well, okay.
So that's
worth a try.
It's worth a try. I don't use it anymore just because it's a little more hassle than I have time or want to deal with right now.
So it's easier to buy slug bait, huh?
Well, it's funny you should ask that or mention that, because I was in the market for some slug bait. I told my wife I need to get to market to get some. I was just about out and parceling it out in very small amounts. And just last week on my morning run, somebody had a pile of stuff out on the curb for free, and what was there? About a half of a bottle of sluggo. So,
okay.
I didn't have to buy it this time. That's what I use in any event.
Okay.
Yeah.
But and I got another question for you. Let's see, which would be. So I've got a gift certificate coming from One Green World for about $25. So I'm wondering what I could still plant this time of year advantageously. And I'll tell you what I was thinking of, hydrangea and or pawpaw, or would either of those, is it too late to get those in the ground? Or
they're going to be in a pot, I'm sure, not bare root, and basically, as long as it takes a little more care right now to plant things, but if you loosen up the roots a little bit, not too much, put them in the ground, you should be fine. And just keep in mind that after this rain, I also noticed it's going to be in the 80s. So, we're going to go have extremes here of hot and cooler weather. And you want to make sure when you've planted a potted plant, it's really important to water the very base of the plant where it came out of the pot, where the pot was, or that soil, because that will dry out much faster. And for it takes at least a couple of weeks for the plant to get its roots established into the soil, the surrounding soil.
Right.
So it can dry out there. So just make sure you keep that moist until, the plant gets established, starts growing.
You're talking about just a little bit deeper watering, though, to get it to the base of the plant. Once it's in the ground, you're talking about just you know.
Not so much a deeper watering, but a more frequent watering of that area.
When
it's hot, because that will dry those, the roots that are in that potting soil will pull that moisture out much more quickly than they would if they were in the native soil.
I see. Okay, that's good. And then a pawpaw needs a shave when it's young too, doesn't it?
You know, that's what I used to think, but I plant mine out in full sun and it's fine.
Okay. All right. That's good to know. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thanks kindly, guys.
You bet. You bet.
Bye-bye.
Okay, well, since not every one of us is going to be using plastic for our in the gardens, and I mean, some of your rows are 100 feet long or 200 feet long, maybe not 200 feet long, but maybe?
600 feet long.
Oh, 600 feet long. Is that one piece of plastic? Yes, it is.
Yeah, it comes really long. But, you know, the kind that I'm talking about for a vegetable area would be wider and probably could be a lot shorter.
Oh, yes.
You know, and it's just a matter of basically what we do is we will put the plastic over the soil, put a little dirt around the edges. If it's a fairly large piece, it's a good idea to put something to hold it down from the wind. And so what we'll do is we'll take like a batten, something, even a bamboo stake or something that you can put maybe every 4 or 5 feet along the plastic and hold it down with a couple. We use a couple like landscape staples, but anything that will hold it down.
You puncture the plastic.
Puncture the plastic and just hold this stick down that will hold the plastic down.
For 4 or 5 feet.
Every 4 or 5 feet. Because otherwise, if you have say you had a 20-foot long space, 4 feet wide, and just around it on the edges, you get a good wind, it's going to pull it up and mess with it.
Okay. Well, that's good if you go
works.
For plastic. Yeah. You're right. Well, we'll talk about the organic traditional
method. Yes, sure. And one other thing is important to recognize is that when you use plastic, you don't get water penetration except where the holes are. So the way we deal with that is we put our drip irrigation line underneath the plastic before we put the plastic on. And we know where that is, so when we punch the holes for the roots, we're not punching the drip irrigation line.
Good thinking.
Yeah.
Okay, back to the phone lines. Good morning, Tim. You're with the Dirtbag.
Good morning. Hey, I got a question for you.
All right.
I have a Chilean wintergreen plant that I bought from One Green World a long time ago. It's about maybe 4 or 5 years old now. And it's been producing berries, but the berries are really tiny, tiny little white berries. And I'm wondering if I might be deficient in something or if I'm doing something wrong or if they're supposed to be that way.
How tiny is tiny?
Like really tiny, like...
pea size or smaller?
Like about the size, smaller than about the half the size of a currant.
Hmm. Well, how big are they supposed to be, Jim?
Well,
What I'm wondering. That's what I'm calling you guys.
And when they're
do they
ripen and you eat them and they're sweet?
They're supposed to be sort of a minty or wintergreen sort of a flavor, and they're too small, I guess, because I've eaten some and I don't detect no flavor like that.
When did you? Is this last year? When you picked them?
I picked them last year, and I picked them just this year. There's some berries on them right now.
I would think one thing. I would think that they're not ripe yet. They would be ripe quite a bit later than this.
Yeah, that could be.
I would let them hang on there for a while and see what happens, because I think
I tried that last year too. I picked them throughout the time that they were on the bush, and they didn't seem to get any bigger or any sweeter.
Hmm. Good question.
Are they getting enough water?
I believe so. They're right next to a fig tree, and
in the shade of a fig tree.
Yeah.
What kind of sunlight do they need, Jimbo?
Well, more sun the better on that particular one. How much shade, how much direct sun do they get?
They get probably at least 6-7 hours a day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I used to grow things underneath or under, kind of around my fig, and then they don't grow anymore, like strawberries, just because there's not enough light. The fig's too shady.
Yeah, there's that, and there's competition too. It might be happier if it was a little further, if it had its own space.
Yeah.
And that the plant itself is growing very well. It's spreading everywhere. But it's just a bit. But maybe you're right. Maybe if I transplanted it into a sunnier area by itself.
Well, transplant one of those shoots that's coming up.
Yeah.
Try that.
Okay.
See what you
I'll try that then. Thank you very much.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks. Okay. Tammy, I think you said we've got Warren's on the phone now. Good morning, Warren.
Yeah. Hello, guys.
Morning.
So I got a couple questions. I think maybe a little bit for Jim there. I was wondering on your silverberry, the Eleagnus, I can't remember the rest of the name.
Abidgii. Sorry.
Right? It seems to drop it, like 80% of the fruit drops before it gets ripe. It kind of forms the fruit, and then it'll all drop, and I'll get like just a little pint of the fruit. I love that berry. It is so flavorful. It's so plump, and it's the earliest berry I get. I have about 10 of them, and they grew fast growing. Just love that shrub. But it keeps dropping all of its fruit, and I just thought if you've been noticing that, or...
Well, it's funny you would ask about that plant, because I was just discussing that the other day with my partner. We rarely get fruit because we're always too busy to go look for it. And of course, I really love the plant for its fall blooms, fall fragrant flowers. That's probably for me the most I get out of it. I'm impressed that you actually get a pint of fruit. I mean, that's pretty neat. But I haven't noticed the fruit drop situation. Normally, that would be something I would guess was from pollination.
Yeah, which happens in the late fall. Is that correct?
Right. And bees work those plants. I mean, if they're happy to have something blooming that late. But but if you have 10 of them, are they different types or are they all the same plant?
They're all the same plant, but I have them mixed in with some other Eleagnus, the kumis. But I guess they wouldn't blossom at the same time. But
that's right. There'd be a very different bloom time. I would suggest one thought possibility would be to if you could fit in another type. If you don't remember which kind you got, I think we used to offer two or three different ones, and to get a little bit of pollination going there, because
cross pollination,
yeah.
Okay, that's a great idea. I'll
any suggestion that has to do with planting more of those Eleagnus is good for you, huh?
It is a great fruit, though. It's really plump, and it really puts off a lot of fruit, but then it all drops. But then a second question I had, have you ever noticed any kind of negative smell on the persimmons, on the fuyus?
Smell from the flowers?
From the flowers. At this stage, about now, this time of season, there's a couple trees at a couple different locations that they put off this, like, rot flesh smell. And I've talked to a couple different people that have them, and they don't notice it.
I've never noticed that. I wonder if there's something else around.
That's what I'm thinking, too.
That's doing that, because
it's not something else. It's totally the persimmon. I have three different locations that I'm growing it, and it's very weird. Oh, okay, so you've never noticed the rotting flesh smell?
No, that's so far away from. There's really no fragrance that I can detect from the flowers. So you have a very sensitive nose, I would say, if you're detecting something like that.
My wife can now notice it, but it's okay. Huh. All right. Well,
but at least it goes away.
Yeah. All right. Well, sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Yep. Yeah. Thank you.
Good questions. Okay, Annalisa, you're on. Good morning.
Good morning. I have a question about mulch around blueberry plants.
Okay.
What kind? I have had several. Suggestions. One person said, put straw around them. Another person said sawdust. And then the first person said, oh, no, that's not good. That will pull all the nutrients out of the soil or whatever. So I like to know what to put around my blueberry plants.
Well, I think Jim and I are in agreement that sawdust would be your best bet.
Oh, yeah?
There. And when it's just on the surface, then there's no micro real action there that pulling the nitrogen from the soil or anything like that.
Oh.
When it's just on the soil surface.
Yeah, this came from a gardener that I really trust, so that's why I'm asking.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with Glenn. That's what sawdust is what typically commercial growers use, and there is, when it's just sitting on the surface, there's not that it's not driving nitrogen because it's not in the soil.
Okay.
But before you put it down, or the recommendation is that to fertilize the blueberries maybe the first parts of March, April, and May.
With what?
Well, I use a balanced fertilizer, organic fertilizer.
Yeah.
So maybe 3/4 cup per plant.
Okay.
You know, roughly. And if you do, and when you have sawdust down, be sure to scratch it into the sawdust.
Yeah. Yeah, and I have access to plenty because my sons are contractors, so I have access to sawdust.
Just make sure it's not black walnut sawdust,
yeah, right.
which is toxic,
or too much of
or cedar you wouldn't want to use,
or plywood.
No.
I mean, you know, that's could be an issue.
Oh yeah,
just because of the glues and things
I'll
like that.
I'll ask, and then somebody also suggested I will have 2 new boxes for my garden beds, and suggested to put a layer of straw down before putting the soil in, so that you didn't have to use as much soil in the box.
No.
No?
I wouldn't recommend it.
No. I don't have it, but...
Okay, good. Yeah. Save yourself some work.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you very much.
You bet.
Bye.
Sure. Bye.
Okay. Red, you're with the Dirtbag. Good morning.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So, powdery mildew.
Okay.
How do I get control of it,
usually it won't come until later on into the summer.
Are you talking, what kind of plant are you talking about, Red?
Actually, it's they're cannabis plants, and they're already dealing with it.
Are they undercover? Are they out in the open?
No, they're undercover, but...
Yeah, that's the problem. I mean, if just to be blunt, because the powdery mildew does not like wet surfaces. They like high humidity, but not wet surfaces. So typically when we start seeing it in plants outside, be that, you know, zucchini or tomatoes, sure, or winter squash, mm-hmm, it will come later in the season. Because we've had rain, or if you're watering it and things like that, it's just not a good growing surface for powdery mildew. So if you wanted to prevent it, and once it has it, there's not a whole lot that can be done on those leaves. But you could mist it every day.
Okay.
My thought about powdery mildew is air movement, and you either can create air movement, or you can have them uncovered and out in the open. But it's really, powdery mildew loves stale air.
Right.
Stale air.
Moist air.
Yeah. Yeah. Moist. Okay. Still moist air is powdery mildew country.
So and that's what
get
we get.
Air movement and mist it maybe and give that a shot. Huh?
Yeah. I mean, okay. Maybe you already have fans going. I don't know, but.
No, we don't.
Okay.
It's not even me, but I'm just trying to help my friend from losing everything, man.
Okay.
So, yeah. All right, cool. Well, yeah, thank you
might,
very much.
That might work. You bet.
All right.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Let's take a break. I'd rather drink muddy water.
As compared to what?
Thank you. Maybe we got to have our little talk. I ought to pack up my things and walk. I know a dollar goes from hand to hand, but before I let you go from man to man, I'd rather drink muddy water, sleep out on a hollow log. I work for you like a Georgia mule. My friends all laughed, call me a fool. Your kisses are sweet as can be, but before I let you make a fool out of me, I'd rather drink muddy water, lay down and sleep in a hollow log. I love you, baby, but you won't be fair. You don't know how to be on the square. Have your fun, baby, if you must, but before I'll have a woman that I cannot trust, I'd rather drink muddy water, sleep out in a hollow.
Hear that bass trombone in there? Uh-huh. Nice. Lou Rawls.
Wow.
Yep. I'd rather drink muddy water. Okay, we've got a couple of business things. I mean, not business things here. Show things to take care of, and then we'll get to Sam on the phone line. First of all, it's time for the garden stumper. Tammy, are you ready for that? No. Of course not, because I...
You sprung it on her.
That's right. Now she's ready, though. Okay, here we are. Okay, we did say that it is, well, we wrote that it is strawberry season. You will, here's just a little bit of strawberry trivia before I ask the garden stumper question.
Mm-hmm.
How many seeds are on the typical strawberry, Jim? Got any idea?
322.
Ooh, that's pretty darn close. No, it's not. 200.
Well, that's, yeah.
200. And the actual strawberry is not considered a berry. The seeds are, but not the strawberry, it's, the berry itself. But now, and they're members of the rose family. You probably knew that.
Of course.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. True berries, such as blueberries and cranberries, have seeds inside. Not les strawberries. Okay, I've given you a hint, though, as to the garden stumper here.
You definitely did.
Name two of the top four most valuable fruit crops in the U.S., at least in 2000. And these are very intuitive when you think about them. So name two of the top four most valuable fruit crops in the U.S. 503-231-8187 is the number to call for the answer to that, or question, just like Sam did. Okay, Sam, your turn.
My turn?
Yep.
I'm going to say apples and pears.
You have one of them.
Okay, that's good enough for government work. Hey, I got
okay.
a question.
Yeah.
My question is, my thing cherries all fell off the tree this year.
Uh-oh.
And it looks like I have a, if it was a peach tree, I'd call it peach leaf curl.
Uh-huh. Have you looked inside those leaves?
I have, they're not closed yet. They're just kind of crinkly.
Well, have you looked at them up close?
No.
I'll bet you what you find in there is aphids.
Is that right?
Yeah.
There's a really bad aphid. Hopefully it's not that one, but there's a I can't remember the name of it. I should remember it, but it's a real dark aphid, and it's big, and it's voracious, and it accumulates in large numbers. But if it's just normal aphids, still, it's not good. But.
Normal being green, I think.
Yeah.
I think I know that family. I'll look.
That's what I would suspect. That's what I see on mine, and I also see ladybugs and other beneficial insects.
Well, they make all the crop drop off?
Yeah. Oh, well, not the crop, but certainly the leaves.
Okay.
So that might be a different animal. Jim, what's I shouldn't have said animal.
Well, as we talked about earlier, some environmental factor causes fruit to drop. Or pollination. Bing is not self-fertile, so if it didn't get pollinated, it could form little fruit, which would then drop.
How big would the fruit get before it would abort if it didn't get pollinated?
Pretty small.
About the size of a marble?
Yeah. That would be probably sort of in the large size probably before it dropped, if it was pollination. The other factors can be some stress from either watering or underwatering or too much water.
Probably not underwater.
Not this year. So,
have you had these trees in and producing before, Sam?
Yes. I've had good crops. In fact, what I do is I wait every year and I use a power saw and cut the extra branches off and pick the fruit off on the ground.
Yeah, that's what I recommend doing. Good.
So I've got two trees, so I know they're getting pollinated.
Two different types of trees?
Well, just two cherry trees.
So yeah. Cherries are weird unique in their pollination requirements, in that
I know.
It's not just any cherry tree that will pollinate.
Do you have cherries on one of them, or both of them drop the fruit?
Cherries on one.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know, unless it's...
Well, that was my garden stumper for the day.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah.
You guys don't get the Fur-Line Thunder Mug. Thanks for having the program. I love you.
Great, thanks.
Thank you.
No calls? Oh, come, no calls. Okay, well, Sam had one of them right. Should we tell him which one that was?
Sure.
All right, it was apples.
Right.
Okay, so we're looking for the top four most valuable fruit crops in the U.S.,
right, and you gave an amazing hint, which wasn't even responded to. So somebody out there has got to be thinking that they've got the answer now.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
But you want to?
Yes. So the Dirtbag Dictionary word.
Right. Open your books, folks.
Get your pencils out.
Turn to C, and the word is cultivar, which is an interesting word because it's actually a combination word. Cultivated variety.
Uh-huh.
And most times we talk about variety, just we don't use cultivar, and that's normally fine because what we're talking about is in the case of a fruit, is a type of fruit, a fruit that can be, in a sense, a variety is one that can be produced vegetatively versus produced by seed. So I had an argument one time with a guy in Canada, which blew me away because the guy was a scientist and was trying to tell me that these seedlings were a variety. And I said, well, you can't call a group of seedlings a variety. You can only call a type of a specific seed. Well, basically, a variety is a selected seedling, selected for qualities that you would imagine would be beneficial, like large fruit, sweet, color, disease resistance, or whatever, but you've selected that and it's a variety, and now you can graft it or bud it or root cuttings of it or tissue culture it, but it has to be produced vegetatively, not by sexual reproduction.
Well, because you can't be assured of what you're getting.
From seed, you cannot be assured of what you're getting. That's correct.
Right.
So, and virtually all commercial fruit crops are grown by vegetative propagation.
They're clones.
So we just were talking about Bing cherry. Well, essentially every Bing cherry in the world started from one seedling, and cuttings were taken from that tree and spread out and propagated, and more were propagated, and pretty soon you've got a million trees, but that's all the same tree.
And to tell you the truth, I don't know, you know, how we would say, do we talk about vegetable cultivars? Not really, because they're seeds.
Well, you know, and with vegetables, it's a little different. And I can't speak about carrots, for example, but you can grow, but carrot of the variety.
Variety, right.
Is a variety. And it is seed propagated in the sense of a vegetable. But in a sense of fruit,
yeah.
I think it's a different botanical process that's
we
going
need
on
more defining on that then.
Yeah, I'm sure some listener probably has a degree in some science that could tell us.
Well, speaking of some listener having something, we've got several calls, I think, for the stumper.
All right.
So let's start the parade here, Tammy. Victoria has the answer. Do you, Victoria? Here she comes. Oh, wait. Okay. There you are, Victoria. Start again.
Okay. It's apples and strawberries.
That's
very good.
That's
Victoria.
Very good, Victoria. You read really between the lines on that one.
You were listening to the show.
I've been listening to you guys for years now. I really appreciate your personalities. And most of all, I love the music.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. That's it.
All righty. Thanks, Victoria.
Bye-bye.
Okay. All right. Let's keep going, Tammy, because we have two more that we can find out. Timothy.
Thanks for the show.
You bet. You bet. So we've got apples and strawberries.
Oh, all right. You know, I'm stumped.
Okay.
That's outside my knowledge. Your advice sounded really sound on the powdery mildew question. I've had some success also, if you can't adjust the conditions for that well enough to manage it. A more extreme measure is you can actually use a solution of citric acid. It's pretty good for killing it. It's not so great for the latest stage of flowering because...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, once that fungus is part of the leaf, then it's part of the leaf. So it's...
Yeah.
You got to kiss those off.
My main question is about a plum tree that I've got, and it's got shot hole disease, which I guess is a fungal blight.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering how late in the season I can treat for that. I know there's antifungal stuff that I can spray on it, but at this point in the summer, is it possible to arrest this in time to
well Jim fruit? Jim, do you recommend even treating for that?
We don't do anything for it. I'm not real aware of what you can do. I mean, there's probably some kind of nasty chemical you can spray on it, but
which we're not going to recommend.
Yeah, I think normally in my experience, it's not it's disfiguring. It doesn't look great and all, but you still get a crop. Have you had trouble getting? Have you gotten fruit off your trees?
Well, last year it bore very little fruit.
I think that was true in general, though, for plums. At least it was for me.
Yeah.
And it's not looking like a great plum year for this year either.
No,
for me.
Not so much.
Yeah.
So much of this is
weather dependent.
Right.
And you know, once it gets warmer and drier, then the fungus it's they just don't reproduce as much, so the tree can recover.
Yeah. Well, I'll cross my fingers.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, thanks a lot.
You bet. Rob. You got an answer for us or a question?
It's disfiguring. It doesn't look great, but you still get a crop.
Okay. We got Rob on the phone now. Hey, Rob.
Rob, too?
Yes.
Okay.
The other Rob.
Yeah.
Okay. My guess is oranges.
Yes, that's the number three crop.
Yeah.
Well, so we're still looking for
someone said apples, I thought apples and oranges.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so we're looking for the most now valuable crop. And when you think about this, it'll just all make sense.
It probably would. Avocados.
Well, we could give you a hint that that much of that most popular one is consumed in a liquid state.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I would say lemons.
No. Lemon juice would not be the most, widely popular, popular liquid. Right. Think of something that you might consume in a social setting.
Mm-hmm. Grape?
Yes.
That's right. Wine grapes, of course.
Right.
So those are the top four there.
Okay, great.
Grapes, apples, oranges, and strawberries in that order.
Wow. Okay.
All right. Well, that's it.
All right, thanks.
Yep, thank you. Okay, Jim, we're out of time.
I can't believe it.
I know, it passes by so quickly, but we appreciate all the calls, and certainly and mostly appreciate Tammy in there.
Yay,
she's
Tammy.
She's got all sorts of buttons that she's...
Yeah. Pushing our buttons.
Pushing and pulling and twirling. Right. Okay, we'll be back next month. I think we'll be gone, though, in August. I was checking my calendar, and I will be gone at the Scandinavian Festival. Okay, sometimes am.
I just want to talk about that next time so people can go and enjoy your Swedish pancakes.
Indeed. Thank you, Jim. And thanks for showing up. I know you're a busy man.
My pleasure, Glenn.
Everybody's busy. Thanks for listening. That's our story so far. Be well.